To summarize, we're going to a location you have failed to scout, to meet a person whose name you don't know, in order to undertake an extremely private job of forensic accounting in the hopes of finding an embezzler in the records. She leaned forward and adjusted the air conditioning, turning one of the vents away from her. I must say, Fred, you do know how to get the most out of your Blood Council bodyguard. I suspect this will be quite the busy night for me. I highly doubt it. Tonight will probably just be a meeting, and even if it does go well enough that we're asked to start right away, I can't imagine I'll be in much danger from some financial records. The sound of the road beneath our spinning tires was all that echoed through the car for several moments as Deborah looked me up and down. It was a habit of hers I didn't enjoy, but she'd been very upfront that this was an evaluation first and foremost, so I could hardly protest being watched so closely. I've read enough to know this isn't your first time having to comb through someone's books, but I'm guessing you've never done it in quite so clandestine a way before. Am I wrong? The circumstances of this job are unusual, I can admit that. Such is the territory of working with parahumans, though. I once had to meet a client in the middle of a field on a moonless night, for example. It's not the place that worries me. It's all of it. Lifting a hand, Deborah raised her fingers one by one as she spoke, a favorite habit when ticking off lists. Location we have no information on. Client we have no information on. Job we have, aside from a general concept, no information on. Worst of all, this is a case of theft. Whenever there's someone stealing, there's someone who doesn't want to be caught stealing. That means that out there right now is one person at a minimum who wants you to fail. How badly they want it will depend on the amount missing and the danger of being caught. Regardless, that's a minimum of one person who is presumably more familiar with our location and employer than you are. Vampires are powerful creatures. But we are still mortal in the sense that we can die. So a little prudence goes a long way in dangerous situations. It took some effort not to squirm in my seat as Deborah calmly broke down the situation. She was spot on about all of it, bringing up points that I likely should have considered. The trouble was that I tended to think of my clients as good people in need of a little help, because by and large, that was what they were. But I also had more than enough experience to know that even if my clients were totally sincere, it didn't mean they were without enemies. I know that if I offer to let you stay outside, you'll interpret it as me trying to ditch you. But I do feel bad about what I might be dragging you into. I'm sorry, you're right. I didn't fully assess the potential danger with this outing. I assumed that because Asha was doing fine, we would as well. But if someone is hiding theft in the accounts, then she's not the person they would target. We're the ones who could actually find the proof. Turning down a new road, I drove a few feet forward and then pulled into a nearly empty parking lot. I recognized Asha's vehicle, but the other few cars within triggered no memories at all. We were early. After all, being on time is 5 minutes late in my business, but not early enough to have a full debate on the merits of entering. Without a word, Deborah popped open her door and emerged into the night. I did the same, only to find her already waiting, having come to my side in the few seconds I'd been turned away. Her grin made it clear that she knew how impressive her speed was, and she wanted me to realize it too. Relax. If bad things happen, it's my job to deal with them. I mistakenly thought you were taking these risks because you had a member of the Blood Council watching your back. But now I see that's not the case. Do I lose points for not thinking the situation fully through? I asked. To my surprise, Deborah laughed. Not maliciously, or with a cruel cackle, just a sincere laugh. Oh, Fred, what did I say when we met? To me, you're all still children. Do you get angry at a child for making mistakes? Of course not. What matters more is that they learn. You admitted you were wrong and listened to the words of someone with experience. Those are both good traits that many young vampires sadly lack. Just make sure you take the lesson to heart. Even assuming you survive the Blood Council's judgment, there are still many ways for a vampire like you to die, and I won't be your bodyguard forever. With that, she checked her watch, tapping the face twice. Also, I know how you work, and we should get going. We won't be early for much longer, which is your equivalent of late. Grabbing my laptop bag from the trunk, I followed as Deborah led the way, visibly scouting ahead for any signs of danger. I dearly, desperately wanted her to be wrong about the danger of our situation. Still, I kept my head down until we were inside, and even then, I moved my gaze with every step. Much as I wanted a night of simple accounting work, it would be folly to dismiss the wisdom of someone with so much more experience than I, especially when she held my very life in her hands. 2. Despite Deborah's dire warnings, there was nary a single person, suspicious or otherwise, as we made our way through the building. Empty halls and a silent elevator ride took us deeper inside until we arrived at an office door marked only by a number. I knocked twice, and moments later it opened to reveal the calm, if visibly weary, face of Asha Patel.
"Fred, good to see you again, and this must be your bodyguard, Deborah."
We exchanged a brief handshake before she went through the same ritual with Deborah. Asha was fully aware of Deborah's actual role. I would never have risked putting a friend in her vicinity without making sure they understood the situation. She was a professional, though, and conducted herself as such, with Deborah returning the sentiment.
"A pleasure. I've heard great things about your work, Ms. Patel."
Asha brushed the compliment aside with a wave.
"Don't let Fred oversell my skills. He's obligated to hold me in high esteem since we often work together. One can't very well short-sell the talents of someone they recommend."
"Oh no, I didn't mean from Mr. Fletcher. Your reputation is spreading beyond him and his clan. The work you've done has been mentioned in other circles as well."
Now that got a reaction. Asha's eyes grew larger, all signs of tiredness vanishing in a flash. Deborah noticed the surprise and quickly clarified.
"Not in a bad way, mind you. I've just heard that you do good jobs for fair rates and excel at keeping your clients' trust. Don't worry, you have nothing to fear from me or the organization I represent. Besides, you are a lawyer, and we fellow bloodsuckers have to watch each other's backs."
It took both Asha and I a moment to realize that Deborah had made a joke. Not a particularly fresh one, admittedly, but it was still a surprise. Most other vampires I'd met, especially the older ones, were not the kind to make jokes, and from her face, I suspected that Asha's experiences had been similar.
"I appreciate it," Asha managed to mumble at last.
"Anyway, let's get out of the hall. I have a few forms for you both to sign, basic NDA stuff, and then you can meet the client. If he agrees to work with you, we move on to the more serious paperwork, and after that, you'll be on your own." Stepping through the doorway, I felt a wave of something wash over me. It was like nausea that only lasted a split second. Were I alone, I might have dismissed it as anxiety, but Deborah's face had crinkled into a frown as she made the journey. Tentatively, she lifted her head and took a sniff.
"Someone has taken great care in warding this place. The physical restrictions are decent, but the sensory dampeners are on a whole other level. I'm smelling and hearing barely better than a human. I take it privacy is a serious concern here."
The statement took Asha back, but only barely. She was rapidly adapting to Deborah, much faster than I had managed, or perhaps was still trying to manage.
That's correct. My client is a mage who deals in very special, very personal requests. Every room in here has been properly warded. He even hired the Clover Twins to enchant the entire office and dampen supernatural senses. This way we can have conversations without worrying about being overheard.
Or a killer can sneak up on us with much greater ease, Deborah countered. I'm not implying that this was the intent of the enchantment, only that it could have such an effect. The workmanship on this is incredible. I hadn't realized that Ainsley and Zane were doing so well following their father's footsteps.
Slowly, I was learning not to be surprised by the amount of information Deborah knew. Our conversation in the car was just one of many reminders of how thorough she was in all things. Evaluating the House of Fred and our alliances would be no exception. Together, we walked behind Asha as she took us down a wide hall, past a turn that led to several offices, and into a large conference room where stacks of paper were already waiting.
Fred knows the drill, and Deborah, you seem like a fast learner. Read the pages, fill them out, and when everything's in order, I have permission to introduce you to our potential employer. If you have any questions, I know you won't, but this is boilerplate, so humor me, then feel free to ask. I'll be back in 5. I need to go check on the boss and make sure he's ready to have the meeting when you finish.
Never one to dally, Asha walked away as soon as she'd finished speaking, leaving Deborah and me alone with the task at hand. I thoroughly perused the documents as I did before signing any form and noticed that Deborah did the same. Apparently, she wasn't going to trust my opinion on whether or not they were safe to sign. Given her constant caution, it made sense, especially since she didn't know for sure whether I had her best interests at heart. Our situation was obviously an unusual one, at least for me. It occurred to me in that moment that I had no idea how many of these evaluations she'd done through her long life. Deborah might very well tell me, if I were to ask. She'd held relatively little back so far. I mentally filed that thought away as something to deal with later on, when we weren't on a client's clock. The next few minutes were filled solely with the sound of scratching pens and flipping papers as we steadily made our way through the stacks of documents. While the details were vague, I was able to put together a few bits and pieces of the business model here and there. From what I could discern, it seemed our client did custom enchanting and creation, not unlike the Clover siblings. However, his business seemed very focused on discretion and privacy, which indicated that whatever it was he made, it might not be entirely legal, or was the sort of thing no one would want to be caught owning. While that didn't narrow things down much, being so in the dark made me grateful for every scrap of information I could get. Deborah finished mere moments after I did, setting her pages off to the side and twirling the pen in her fingers.
So much paperwork. I'd almost forgotten what it was like to be the one signing these sorts of documents, rather than the one handing them out. Takes me back to my own days working with the law. Of course, we didn't have pens back then, and our version of paper wasn't nearly so uniform or mass-produced.
Stuck in a room, waiting for Asha, with nothing else to do until she arrived, my curiosity finally began to win out over the distance I was trying to keep between us.
Forgive me if this is rude, I'm still learning our culture, but is it impolite to ask another vampire or any parahuman their age?
Depends on the context. If you were to ask Petra of the House of Terva, it could be interpreted as you sizing him up. Seeing how powerful he is. Not an act of aggression, per se, but one that might imply unfriendly terms. If you were to ask me, it would be a different matter. The gulf between us is so wide that your question would indicate an academic curiosity, because we both know that regardless of the answer, you aren't stupid enough to attack me. Same with other parahumans. Just use your head, be polite, and think through the context of your situation.
Then how old are you, Deborah? I have no idea what age the Blood Council vampires are supposed to be.
It varies, Deborah replied, and I decline to answer your question.
That response caught me off guard.
You just said, I said it was fine to ask. I'm not obligated to answer. A person's age is their own business.
Her grin said more than her words. She'd baited me into this intentionally. I couldn't very well press the issue, though. Deborah was right. It was her secret to share with whomever she chose.
There's a better question you should be asking anyway. One much more pertinent to our current situation.
The hairs on the back of my neck rose, more from the sudden serious look in Deborah's eyes than anything else. If she was concerned, then I certainly should be as well.
What question is that?
This was a sizable stack of papers. We're quick readers, but neither of us is that fast. So why is it that we've finished all of this, and Miss Patel has yet to rejoin us?
I barely had time to realize that Deborah was right before a faint sound hit my dulled senses. Sharp, shrill, and piercing, it was the kind of noise my vampire senses were always attuned for, as any predator's subconscious would be. It was the sound of someone screaming. Specifically, the sound of Asha screaming.
3. I was out of my chair and halfway to the door when a firm hand grabbed me by the shoulder. Deborah was behind me, eyes on the door as she gave a gentle yank and jerked me to her side.
Wrong. The bodyguard goes first.
Then hurry! Asha's in trouble! I tried to pull away, but Deborah held firm.
Struggling was pointless. I may as well have been tugging against concrete for all the good it did. Only when I stopped trying to break free did Deborah explain.
If she were in trouble, then rushing into danger and getting hurt would not do her any good. We're vampires in the territory of a professional mage. Home turf, if you will. There are countless spells, wards, and traps that may be in effect as of this moment. Say you run out there and get frozen in place or turned to ash. What happens to Asha then? Being strong is not the same as being all-powerful. You want to know how I lived long enough to get a seat on the Blood Council? Forethought. Planning. Caution and courage in the right measure. Now get behind me, and let's not waste any more of her time. And calm down. Ms. Patel isn't hurt. The scream of someone in pain is markedly different from what we just heard.
I had no doubt a vampire of Deborah's presumably ancient age would be able to make such a distinction, but that didn't mean I believed her. She might be saying it just to calm me down. Still, she had raised several good points, and the most relevant issue was that me being lectured did nothing to help Asha. So I did as I was told. I stopped struggling and allowed Deborah to take the lead. She was efficient once she got to work. In no time, we were through the door and down a hall, Deborah scanning every surface around us and every corner we passed as we made our trek. It didn't take long before a familiar scent hit my nostrils. Good as the wards were, now that we were close, there was virtually no magic that could keep a vampire nose from latching on to the smell of blood. It was the scent some part of my undead brain was always searching for, waiting for, hoping for. I didn't greatly enjoy that part of my mind. However, it was there, so I did my best to make use of it when occasion demanded. We followed the smell a little farther down the hall to a large office with a door hanging askew. As soon as we stepped inside, we found Asha standing over the body of a middle-aged man, based on appearances anyway, lying face down on the desk with a curiously large hole in the middle of his back. The wound was far too big for most weapons I'd seen. It would have had to be as big around as my fist to do that kind of damage. Asha was trying to tend to him,
pressing paper towels from the bathroom into his wound, despite the fact that he was clearly already dead. As she shoved them in deeper, accomplishing nothing, I noticed her frantic breathing and the tears that leaked down her face. Right. Asha was panicking, because that's what humans did when they encountered their first dead body. She was a tough, smart, capable person, but no one was mentally prepared to walk in on a corpse in the middle of an office. No one normal, anyway. As I stood there, momentarily dumbstruck, it truly hit me how different the last few years had made me. Not my body, not my diet. Me. Fred. The person. Someone was dead right in front of me, and instead of breaking down like the old me would have, I was trying to figure out what had caused a wound like that. A corpse was no longer a thing that gave me pause, and I wasn't sure I liked realizing that about myself. There were bigger concerns than the long-term effects of being a vampire, however. Someone was dead, which meant they'd been killed, and that meant we could all very well be in danger. Thankfully, Deborah was more on the ball than I was, striding over and carefully moving Asha aside.
I didn't. I kept knocking. He likes to keep his privacy, so I didn't think anything of it. I finally came in, and he was...
It's okay. This wasn't your fault. I was surprised by how soothing Deborah's tone had become. She was almost tender as she pulled Asha over to a corner, settling her down on the floor with the utmost care. Stay there. Take some time to cry or shake or whatever you need. Don't take too long, though. We've got a situation to handle. With Asha out of the way, Deborah walked right back over to the body. I expected her to examine the wound or maybe check his pulse out of formality. What I hadn't been prepared for was for Deborah to lean down and take a long drink from the open hole in the dead man's back.
"What are you doing?"
I started forward, then froze as her gaze whipped up, anchoring me in place.
"Learning. Based on how much the blood has cooled, he's been dead for less than half an hour. May have even been alive when we first arrived. There's no tingling of direct magic, so the wound was most likely made by something physical, and, most importantly, by drinking his blood. I've now confirmed that this is indeed the real corpse of a mage. Magic can fake a lot, but I've never met false blood that could fool a vampire's tongue. We're in a house of magic, Fred. Take nothing at face value. On that note, come over here and drink."
An initial objection rose in my throat, and then halted. Nothing Deborah had said or done was without sound cause. The least I could do was ask for her reasoning. "Why do I need to drink?"
"Several reasons. One, you might need the extra nutrition if we end up in a fight. Two, sooner or later you'll need to learn how blood tastes as it cools in a body, so that next time you're in this situation you'll be prepared. And three, the main one, is that drinking from a mage gives you a touch of their power. We can't wield magic directly as undead creatures, but a nip of this will allow you to push against wards, see through illusions, and several other nifty tricks that may come in handy before the night is done. Unless you prefer being trapped in a mage's stronghold with a potential killer and no way to discern which paths or objects are real. Hell, a strong enough mage could have cloaked themselves and hidden in this room with us."
Asha's breathing picked up again, and I glanced around wildly as though that would help. Mercifully, Deborah didn't leave us in that state for long.
"No one's in the room. Or if they are, then they're so powerful that there would be no point in hiding. Either way, we're fine for the moment. Now get over here and drink so we can have two sets of eyes worth trusting."
My feet felt numb as I stumbled forward, staring at the dead body before me. Vampires drank blood. It was in us, ingrained to the core during our transformation. As much as I wanted to protest, Deborah had already built a logical enough case to convince me that it was a sound call. My body, on the other hand, required no such discussion. It was already guided toward the blood, instinct trying to override reason. I took my time, refusing to allow myself to indulge like an animal. This was a person once, a living being who had people who cared about him, not a snack to be gobbled. Slowly, keeping a firm grip on my urges, I leaned down and took a carefully measured sip, roughly one of the same length that Deborah had drawn. It was cooler than I was used to from warming blood in the microwave, yet it still set off all the pleasure centers that blood tripped in our kind. As I started to straighten up, I found a hand on my back, keeping me in place.
"More. You're not as old as I am, Fred. You need more to be fully useful."
With my face inches away from the substance all vampires craved, it didn't take more convincing than that to keep me drinking. As I did, I began to notice a sensation surrounding me, like an unseen scratchy blanket made of the very air draped over me. It was uncomfortable, so I tried to shrug it off, and as I did, it gave way, albeit only slightly. When the blanket moved, I felt a surprising surge in my limbs, strength I hadn't even missed suddenly returning. The wards, that's what was pressing us down. That's what I'd imagined to shake off slightly. They were still there, still trying to cover me when I let my attention waver, but for now, they were lessened.
"Stop!"
The command came without warning, so I finished my last gulp and straightened up. Deborah seemed fleetingly surprised that I'd followed her direction, not that the expression lingered for more than a flash.
"Can you feel them now?"
"I think so. My senses are still dull, though."
"These sensory wards were made by the Clover siblings. You'll need far more power to punch through them," Deborah explained. "Or some of their blood. It's easier to fight off the magic of a mage whose blood you've drunk. That's why the physical wards give so easily now. We just sipped from their creator. A man who, I think, it's about time we learned the name of."
Her gaze traveled over to Asha, who'd managed to pull herself together in the time I'd spent drinking. There was no saving the trails of tears through her makeup, or the shirt she'd gotten bloody while trying to help, but the panic had largely subsided to reveal the usual Asha back in place. She was still shaken, as any decent person would be, yet she'd marshaled control of herself in only minutes. There was a reason Asha had managed to survive this long in the parahuman world, after all.
"Seems safe to say that NDAs and the like are no longer a major concern," Asha agreed. "I'll tell you everything I know. But could we go somewhere else first? The body is making it hard to focus."
"Of course."
Deborah moved in a blur, arriving at the door before I had time to so much as even shift a foot.
"But as I told Fred before, the bodyguard goes first. You two stay behind and stay close. Until we know what we're dealing with, take nothing for granted."
4. Much as my instincts were screaming that we should make for an exit, I followed Deborah. She led us back to the room where we'd filled out paperwork and thus even farther from any means of escape. It felt contradictory, yet I remained silent as Asha and I trailed the elder vampire's footsteps. Slowly but surely, I was learning that, at least until she decided to kill me, Deborah took her job as a bodyguard seriously. No sooner were we back in the contract room than Deborah shut the door, planted her back against it in lieu of a lock, and faced us. "I'm guessing one, if not both of you, is probably wondering why we're not just breaking for the exits. We may do that next, depending on what Asha has to say. But even with the added benefit of some mage blood, we're still on a magic wielder's home turf. I want to know who our potential killers are, what their abilities are known to be, and how those skills might translate into laying traps.
We knew the hall from this room to the office was safe because we'd just walked it. Any other route is suspect until we've confirmed it to be secure, and that goes triple for hallways leading to an exit. The moment we became witnesses to a murder, we gave someone out there extremely good incentive to not let us survive.
Brusque as her delivery might have been, it was hard to argue with the content.
Asha appeared to share a similar sentiment as she began to rattle off information as fast as possible. Phineas Hawkins was the man we just found. He owns this company, and has for several decades. Officially, they do custom enchantment work, like what you've seen with Ainsley and Zane Clover. However, Phineas's business was structured around a high degree of confidentiality and privacy. These were the people you turned to if you wanted something made with as little connection to you as possible.
Black market magic? Deborah interrupted.
Probably a little, here and there, although they made sure to keep me away from anything that might signal that kind of work. The majority of what I know about is private for other reasons. Most people don't want others to know if they need magical virility potions, or enchanted mannequins with working anatomy, or whips that operate themselves. Please tell me you get the idea, and I can stop. We both nodded, although Deborah looked a tad surprised.
Someone was able to build a company off such a limited market? Food, drugs, and sex are often called the three recession-proof businesses, I explained. People are always going to be hungry, looking for escape and, for something to get frisky with.
Asha showed mercy and took over for me. Fred's got it, and Phineas was making serious money. Over the last decade, his business has grown exponentially, and he was looking at opening new offices across the country in the next few years. That's part of why I was brought on, to go over everything in preparation for the expansion. When Phineas found out the books weren't lining up, he feared a scandal would tank his business. That's why we brought in someone who specializes in discretion and knows their way around cooked books.
I still can't believe they would resort to murder so callously. How much could be missing to make that kind of crime worth the risk, especially since this will likely bring the business to a grinding halt? It's not like the killer will be able to keep stealing. I couldn't wrap my head around the idea of killing to cover up something as relatively bloodless as embezzlement. Deborah, on the other hand, had no such issues.
Oh, I don't know about that. Wherever there are people willing to pay for privacy, there are secrets they'll pay to remain secret.
With a list of clients and a little bit of evidence, someone could turn this tragedy into a lucrative blackmail business.
The thought hadn't even dawned on me, and from the expression on Asha's face, I think it caught her by surprise as well. Once the idea was out there, it didn't take her long to start putting the pieces together.
As far as I know, Phineas himself was the main layer of protection between employees and customers. Workers only ever got account numbers, never client names. The sole person with knowledge of and access to those records was Phineas. It was one of the many privacy protections that made people comfortable using his services.
Which means, if the killer does opt to go the blackmail route, we now know they'll need to find those records, assuming they're stored on the property, Deborah concluded. That's good to keep in mind if we need leverage down the line, but right now, I'm more concerned with what we're up against. Did Phineas have suspicions about who might be dipping their hand in the company cookie jar?
That question grew a dark, tired laugh from Asha. Hard as she was working to push through, the trauma of the night was visibly wearing on her. Yet she took only a few seconds before shaking her head.
Too many suspicions, honestly. He wasn't a trusting man, hence why he was able to work in this industry to start with. Once he found the discrepancy, he trusted no one on the inside. That's part of why we brought in an outsider to look over the accounts. But from a practical standpoint, one of the senior managers makes the most sense. They have the necessary access, and are all capable mages in their own right. Dayu Lao specializes in potions, ointments. Basically, she's good with any kind of magic where the effect is applied to a body. Kevin Crawford handles animation,
If it moves and it isn't supposed to, he's the man you see. Last is Megan Bradley, who focuses on generalized enchantment. Her department handles anything that falls outside the other's purview, as well as tacking on the finishing touches to most products.
That hole in his chest sure didn't look like the work of any potion I've ever seen, I pointed out. A straightforward assessment, admittedly, but someone had to get the obvious out of the way. Unfortunately, even my seemingly simple deduction was met with resistance.
If you were going to kill someone and you were smart, the first thing you'd do is find a way to make it look like someone else's specialty. Maybe create a potion that has a claw burst out of the victim's back and then fade away.
Kind of a stretch, Asha said. It certainly is. I'm not saying that's what happened, only that we don't yet have enough information to effectively rule anyone out.
Deborah paused, pressing her ear against the door for a few brief seconds. I think we're clear for now, though it's hard to tell what sounds are what. This would be much easier without the wards in place, but we'll make do with what we have. For now, is there anything else we should know?
This time, Asha didn't respond right away. She stayed quiet, scouring her brain for any details that might prove useful.
Nothing I can think of. Phineas wasn't big on sharing secrets. While the reply was somewhat expected, it wasn't terribly heartening. We might be up against one of three skilled mages, or any peon who'd gotten greedy.
Asha's suspect list was nothing more than a guess. There is no way of knowing for sure what sort of enemy we faced, or what sort of traps they might have laid. Truthfully, I was used to working with little information during a crisis, but the more time I spent with Deborah, the more I realized that such really shouldn't be the case. I'd always known I'd survived some dicey situations on pure luck and the assistance of powerful friends, but I was only now beginning to grasp just how out of my depth I'd really been.
Deborah moved away from the door, pacing slowly around the room.
So, we've got a potential suspect list of three, with a secondary, less likely list comprised of the entire company. Sounds like, no matter what, we're going to have to walk out of here blind. Being prudent, we need to assume there are traps or other dangers lying in wait. Better to be wrong and safe than right and dead, so we'll obviously want to keep exposure to a minimum. Tell me, he who leads the House of Fred, how would you proceed if I weren't here?
Even knowing that I was in the process of being tested, this still felt like an inopportune time for a pop quiz. Then again, had I gotten my way, I would have shown up without Deborah at my side, so perhaps it was indeed a fair question. If people were going to look to me in a crisis, if I was to take responsibility for the safety of my clan, then this might very well be the kind of situation I needed to be capable of handling. After taking a few moments to consider the circumstances, I chose my course of action.
Assuming you weren't here, I'd take the lead ahead of Asha. I'd go slow, ducking into rooms and offices as needed, make our way through the hallways bit by bit, being sure to keep a watch for any traps or attackers. My senses might be dulled, but I should still be able to hear a mage before they can hear us.
Assuming they haven't cast a spell to augment their own senses, Deborah corrected. Not a bad plan overall, but there's a fundamental humanness to the thinking that causes some misjudgments. Tell me something. Why would you duck into offices and rooms along the route?
Because mages can't cast forever, I replied. They have limits, and that means they would have to prioritize where they laid traps, focusing on the hallways we'd likely use to escape. Putting surprises inside of offices might pay off, but compared to the power it would waste, that's a poor gamble to take. I can't assume the rooms are completely safe. They're just much more likely to be safe than the hallways.
It might have been my imagination, but for a fleeting moment, it seemed like Deborah was impressed by my analysis. There was even a tinge of approval in her voice.
Well done, and perfectly accurate. You grasp exactly why the rooms are probably safer than the hallways.
So tell me this. Why does your plan involve hallways at all?
Because that's how we would have to get to the exit.
If she was assuming I had some sort of teleportation or transformation power stolen from a parahuman, Deborah was in for a massive disappointment. How else were we going to get to the exit if not through the hallways? Moving quickly, yet slow enough for us to track, Deborah walked over to the back wall of the room.
No, Fred. Hallways are how humans would have to get to the exit.
I know you work hard to ignore this fact, but you are not a human.
If you don't believe me, look at how Asha was affected by finding that body, and then look at yourself. You don't want to hurt people, that's fine. You don't want to play the game of vampire politics, well, you're hardly the first to feel that way.
But thinking of yourself as anything other than a vampire limits your options, and that's a liability you can't afford in the long term. That last line stung, largely because this was a lesson I should have already absorbed. Lillian had put the idea of breaking through walls into my head when we worked together in a haunted castle, yet here I was sticking to hallways again. Being in human surroundings kept me in a human frame of mind, and I was starting to realize that wasn't always a positive outcome. With a single smooth motion, Deborah punched through the wall in front of her, creating an arm-sized hole into the next room, a storage closet with brooms, mops, and paper towels. In no time, she'd enlarged the opening enough for any of us to slip through. Once the hole was finished, sheetrock floating from her hands, Deborah tossed a look at me over her shoulder.
"We aren't bound to the same paths they are. We don't need hallways because walls aren't strong enough to stop us. Now, both of you, keep up. Finding a path to the exit isn't the same as being there. We're not safe until this place is a distant memory in the rearview mirror."
5. All three of us were silent as Deborah tore through the walls of one room after another, making as little noise as possible with such a messy task. She was surprisingly quick, and not just in a faster-than-humans kind of way. From the precision and surety with which she worked, it was easy to deduce that this wasn't Deborah's first time escaping through walls. It actually boggled the mind to try to grasp what could be a new experience for her. If she was old enough to be part of some legendary council, as well as what I'd ascertained from her own casual comments, then Deborah had surely been around for at least 1,000 or so years. Living, in a manner of speaking, for that long, certainly one would run out of new things to do or try, new obstacles to face. Perhaps that was why she could remain calm and critical no matter how the situation soured. To her, this very well might be nothing more than a rerun of adventures she'd already experienced. With Deborah focused on making our doorways, I kept my attention on Asha. She was doing better, the rush of adrenaline likely helping to push down the memories of walking in on a corpse. Still, I kept her between Deborah and me, just to be safe. As the only human among us, she was the easiest target, and the one it would take only a single shot to kill. Even as a subpar vampire, I could take more punishment than a human. Ideally, none of that would come into play before we were free. Unfortunately, as was often the case, what was hoped for and what occurred were quite disparate. It looked like any other wall we'd seen so far, situated in a mundane office with too many motivational cat posters. What made it different was the fact that when Deborah punched, the surface rippled with a red-orange light rather than caving in under her strength. Another blow, this one heavier, and more ripples spread across the wall. Deborah lifted her arm once more, then slowly lowered it.
"Fred, you saw the barrier, right?
The colors along the wall? How could I miss them?"
"Hang on, what colors?"
Asha was looking back and forth between us, with occasional glances to the wall mixed in as well.
"All I saw was her hitting the wall and it having no effect."
"Oh, there was an effect, all right."
It may have been my imagination, but I thought I caught a touch of pride in Deborah's tone.
"Fred and I can see it thanks to the mage's blood. It looks as though someone put up a barrier to keep people from escaping. A shockingly strong one at that.
I can't imagine a cornered caster threw this together on the fly. Did Phineas have any kind of safety system in place that you know of? Asha glanced at the wall once more, as if she might see the magic through sheer force of will. He warded the place up and down, not to mention how seriously he took his privacy. I don't have details, but just from knowing the man, I'd bet my car he's got plenty of magical security woven into the office. Deborah threw a quick jab to the same spot she'd hit before, this time causing so many ripples it looked like a miniature wave pool. That makes more sense. With the kind of punishment I'm doling out, most barriers would have run out of mana by now. This must have been carefully crafted and reinforced over a long while. Most likely our victim's death snapped the cage shut as a lockdown protocol to ensure his murderer didn't get away, or the killer activated it to keep us from escaping. That was problematic. If Deborah was right, then we were stuck inside until someone who knew how to turn off the barrier came along, or we'd dealt with the killer. Either way, we'd be trapped, most likely with a murderer, for unknown hours. If the sun came up, Deborah and I wouldn't be able to leave the building until the following evening. The parking lot wasn't shaded enough to where we could safely enter the car. Luckily, I wasn't completely ignorant about magic. True, I was far from a scholar, but it was impossible to be friends with people like Amy and Neil without picking up a few tidbits along the way. Hang on, even if this was made with a lot of care and power, there are still limits to it, right? Amy explained this to me once. The barrier needs mana to repel attacks. The more attacks it takes, the lower the mana goes, and eventually, it will give way. Even if a mage was actively feeding power to the barrier, we could theoretically pound on it until the magic runs dry. We could do that, but it's dangerous, Deborah replied. When you break a spell improperly, there's feedback, as the enchantment phrase. It could be nothing more than a loud noise, or a crack of lightning, or a burst of energy. It could also turn everyone nearby into frogs. You and I have some protection thanks to the mage's blood, but depending on how strong the barrier is, even that might not prove to be enough. As for Asha, she's got no defense at all, though that's not to say she'd definitely be in trouble. That's the problem with destroying magic. The effects are so unpredictable it becomes a total crapshoot. Doesn't it figure? The one time I suggest brute force as a solution, and it's possibly the most dangerous route we could take. Let's perhaps save that for a last-ditch effort, then. Do we have any other options? Of course. We're vampires, Fred. I've guided you toward escape because I'd assumed that would be your strategy, but we've always had another option. We can do what our kind are made for. We can hunt. There was a flash of something in her eyes when she said the word hunt. Not dangerous, per se, in the sense that Deborah was already dangerous in every aspect of her being. No, this was old, a part of her not influenced by modern politeness and general decorum, a piece that had been untouched by her centuries upon the earth because it didn't need to change or evolve. The part of her that was a hunter, that had lived and died by blood long before America, the agency, or refrigeration had made my kind of lifestyle viable. Even seeing a sliver of what lay beneath the surface of her humanity was enough I had to repress an involuntary shiver, a habit my body refused to kick from life. Then again, maybe I just hadn't given it enough time yet. Who knew what sort of reactions I'd have in a few more decades? You want to go after the killer? Asha, to my surprise, was nodding in agreement. That makes sense. If they're the ones who activated the barrier, then we might get free by capturing them. And even if stopping them doesn't let us escape, at least we can wait safely until someone comes to set us free. Fight or flight, and flight has been taken off the table. This is why I like lawyers, practical people almost to a fault. What do you say, Fred? I am here as your bodyguard, after all. I can't very well go off hunting for some unknown assailant and leave you unprotected.
Where you walk, so must I, ensuring your safety.
Hardly subtle, not that I'd especially needed the nudge. This was on me. If we hunted the killer, then I had to be the one to make that call. It would be more dangerous than hiding, but also had the advantage of giving us agency in our own fate. Cowering in a corner was certainly a more appealing option, but unfortunately, it wouldn't do much to help us escape or see justice done for Phineas.
We can hunt the killer in order to capture them. We find, subdue, and when the dust clears, hand our murderer over to the agency. Maybe take a little bit of blood if it will help us break through the barrier. Otherwise, we don't hurt anyone. Can you work with that?
In a move I was not at all expecting, Deborah gave me a smile, absent of even the hint of fangs.
Can, have, and will again. Orders heard and understood. I won't do any more damage than is absolutely necessary to halt our enemy and keep you safe.
Then I guess we should talk about... My words were interrupted by a cacophony of splintering wood and spraying sheetrock. From several rooms back, something had punched through the wall from the hallway. It was hard to make out when peering back through the holes Deborah had made, but it looked like a claw of some kind. Huge, red, and nearly football-sized at the tip, the appendage wiggled around several times before vanishing back through the wall, only to punch through once more in a different location. I looked to Deborah for guidance, only to realize that she was already looking at me. Right. I had to call the shots. That was part of her assessment. Asha's eyes were wide, but she was holding together better than anyone had a right to expect. We'd wanted to find our mage, and now they were either attacking us directly or using some kind of magic to do so. Either way, they couldn't be too far away. Was this our chance?
We need to go, I announced, leading them both over to the back wall of the office. This one wouldn't lead outside, so the barrier shouldn't be a problem. To be sure, I jammed my own fist into the wall and found it slid easily through.
Deborah was already at my side, widening our exit, but Asha was slower to join us.
Wasn't this what you wanted? Our killer is right there, and we have a, no offense, Fred, seriously powerful vampire with us. Why run?
Because if we fight right now, the mage is the one who initiated it. They might have laid traps, wards, or who knows what out in the hallway. Maybe they have several spells on the tip of their tongue ready to cast the moment we show ourselves. It's possible we can't avoid a head-on fight, and if it comes to that, we'll take our chances. But if at all possible, we should try to catch the mage off guard.
Well said, Deborah complimented. Nice to see you learn quickly.
I helped her tear apart the wall and made to poke my head through until Deborah yanked me back. She dove into the next room, an office mercifully devoid of cat posters. Rather than going for another wall, however, she flung open the door to reveal a dark hallway. Neither Asha nor I needed further explanation. It was clear that if we kept using the walls, we'd leave a trail that took no effort to follow. Using the hallways was a risk, but since the passageways on that side of the offices didn't lead to exits, odds were fair that they hadn't been trapped. Not that we had much choice in the matter. Sparing a glance back, I could see that two claws had now punched into the wall, and for a moment I caught a glimpse of a hulking form in the shadows of the widening hole. Then Deborah hissed for me to move, and I did. Together, we sprinted out into the hallway, searching for a safe place to regroup and figure out our next move.
6. Although it had been a while since I worked in a proper corporate environment, I still recognized the intern's room upon arrival. The cramped arrangements of the desks gave it away. Everything was so close together that a sneeze from one chair would ruffle papers halfway down the aisle. I could still faintly pick up the scent of sweat and anxiety that perfumed the air,
and found myself momentarily grateful that our senses had been forcibly dampened. That was not a smell I wanted to experience through a full-strength vampire nose. Once we were past the door, Deborah eased it closed, being sure to leave a crack through which we could see and hear. Tracking something as huge as the entity I'd seen would have been sheer simplicity with our ears and noses at normal capacity, but as things stood, we couldn't risk being snuck up on again. She stayed by the door, ready and alert, and whispered in our direction, "What would you like to do now?" It hadn't escaped my notice that Deborah kept forcing the decisions on me, not that she was being especially covert about it. I pushed that worry out of my head for the moment. We had to concern ourselves with surviving the night first. I could fear her assessment once we were free. Besides, during our last escape, I had given the matter some consideration. "We need to find our murderous mage. Asha, I'm sorry to keep leaning on you, but you know this office better than either of us. What are the likeliest spots someone might hole up in this kind of situation? Are there safes to loot or well-defended rooms to shelter in while you send a monster to kill the witnesses? Whether they put the barrier up or got trapped in here with us, presumably our enemy will be using their time wisely." "I don't know. I really didn't wander the building very much." Closing her eyes, Asha began to take deep, slow breaths, willfully calming her very rightfully frayed nerves. "The offices of the more senior staff have wards and security of their own. Phineas's were down because he was already dead, or maybe the killer broke them while getting to him. I'm not exactly a magic expert. Either way, if they wanted to hide until we were dead, one of those would probably be the safest spot, assuming they knew how to use the safety measures. That would also be the likeliest place to find documents or data. Phineas had a reputation for never leaving so much as a scrap, but not everyone who works here could have been that cautious. If you were looking for a blackmail file as your golden parachute, those offices would be the place to start." Asha's eyes popped open, more vibrant than they'd been before. Taking a few moments had visibly helped to steady her, as did focusing on something other than our current situation. "Sorry, that's all I've got." "That's plenty. It gives us a destination, assuming you can point us toward the senior staff offices," I told her. "I can get us there eventually, even if it takes a few tries." From the doorway, Deborah held up a hand, signaling for us both to be silent. We complied instantly, waiting, tense, ready to bolt at a moment's notice. Finally, the hand came down, albeit with terrifying slowness. "I think it passed us by. Now's our time to move. Fred, be ready to carry Asha if we have to sprint. Human speed might not cut it, and at that point you may as well throw her to the monster yourself." Deborah waved us forward without another word, stepping into the hallway before Asha and I had so much as a chance to reply. We followed, of course. For the first part of our journey, our goal was simply to get away from the monster. Whichever route gave us that outcome was the one we'd follow. Eventually, we had to start moving toward the senior staff offices. Here began the guessing game. Whenever we would hit a fork in the halls, Asha would have to try to recall which direction was the right one. While she did her best, neither the circumstances nor her memory were ideal, so we ended up having to backtrack more than once. Sometimes, Deborah would hold up her hand again, and we would all freeze, waiting until whatever had pricked her attention subsided. The longer we took and the deeper we went inside the office, the more I became aware of how labyrinthine the structure was. Twists, turns, halls that led to nowhere. Someone had wanted to make sure this wasn't a place where intruders would feel welcome. It lent the advantage to those who knew the terrain, which was one more detail adding credence to Deborah's "don't fight a mage on their home turf" philosophy. Thankfully, we encountered relatively few traps. The only ones we saw were easy to spot, taking the form of arcane symbols that glowed softly on the walls and floor. It was only after I recalled Asha's inability to see the barrier and double-checked with her that these symbols were also invisible that I grasped the truth of the matter. The traps were simple to see purely because Deborah and I had taken the time to drink from the mage. Without that blood in us, any one of those traps could have gone unseen and been triggered. Dire a situation as it felt, things would have been far worse without Deborah's guidance. At last, after three dead ends in a row, Asha gently slapped my shoulder as we came around a turn. She was nodding frantically, yet dared not risk even a whisper. The message still got through, loud and clear. This was the area we were searching for. I motioned to Deborah, who responded with a nod. If Asha's theory was right, our killer might be in one of the nearby rooms. This was both a great opportunity and a highly dangerous position. Depending on who got the drop on whom, this might bring the evening to a close in a matter of minutes. Standing in what would have been almost full darkness if not for my unnatural vision, wards or no wards, a vampire's eyes were built for seeing in the night, a sound reached my ear. Not a loud one, nor even an especially significant one, like a footstep or a whispered curse.